ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also talk about why a plant-based diet is the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about the environment, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Kip Anderson and Keegan Kuhn. They're co-directors of a new film called Cowspiracy. That's coming up a little later on the show, but first some news. The rapid emergence of nanotechnology suggests that size does matter. It turns out that if you break common substances like nickel and silver into really small particles, measured in nanometers, which are billionths of a meter, they behave in radically different ways. According to the Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies at Virginia Tech University, 96 food items currently on U.S. grocery shelves contain unlabeled nano ingredients. Examples include Danone yogurt, Silk soy milk, Hershey's dark chocolate, and Kraft American cheese singles, all of which contain nano-sized titanium dioxide. As recently as 2008, only 8 U.S. food products were known to contain nanoparticles, a more than tenfold increase in just 6 years. Nano-sized titanium dioxide is used as a color enhancer. It makes yogurt and soy milk whiter and brightens dark chocolate. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration acknowledges that nanoparticles pose risks that are different from their normal-sized counterparts, but has done nothing to slow down their rapid move into the food supply. Rather than requiring food industries to do rigorous safety studies, the FDA has proposed non-binding recommendations for such research, which, of course, hasn't happened. Nano-laced food products are entering the market at a rate of 3 to 4 a week, and there is evidence that nanoparticles pose higher health risk. The National Institutes for Occupational Safety and Health has recommended sharply lower exposure limits for nanotitanium dioxide, the stuff being put into yogurt and soy milk and other products, because of concern about the stuff being carcinogenic. It seems the U.S. food industry is much more concerned about making a product look good so that we will buy more of it than they are about safety. I think for the time being, I'll stick with my slightly gray homemade soy milk.
From One Green Planet, chicken lovers may be getting another treat with their wings, chlorine bleach. The USDA has introduced a new set of regulations detailing how companies can streamline chicken production by cutting out measures requiring them to test for standard E. coli or salmonella. As if you needed any more reason to ditch chicken, the new risk of intestinal infection just puts the icing on the cake. But don't worry, because companies no longer have to test for E. coli and salmonella, they will be allowed to take extra precautions, besides mass distributing antibiotics, to ensure their chicken is germ-free. What are these precautions, you might ask? Dipping chicken in antimicrobial substances, including hydrogen peroxide and chlorine. So yes, this new regulation, or lack thereof, is pretty insane, but it is being put into place to allow chicken producers to pump out more meat in less time. Once again, in the name of profit and continued demand for meat, governmental bodies are allowing big ag to influence policies that only have the best interest of their bottom lines in mind. When the health and safety of the consumers are put last, we all suffer the consequences. Sure, it might be nice to buy a week's worth of meat for $10, but considering the other personal, environmental, and animal consequences, is it really worth it?
Species of plants and animals are becoming extinct at least 1,000 times faster than they did before humans arrived on the scene, and we're in the sixth great extinction period, according to a new study conducted at Duke University and published last week in the journal Science. The study looked at past and present rates of extinction and found a lower rate of extinction in the past than scientists had thought. Species are now disappearing 10 times faster than biologists had believed. Numerous factors are combining to make species disappear much faster than before, but the number one issue is habitat loss. Species are finding no place to live as more places are built up and more wilderness areas are converted to cropland to grow feed for the world's livestock. The new study cites two other important causes of extinction: overfishing of the oceans and climate change. And climate change has been exacerbated by animal agriculture. 5 times in the past, a vast majority of the world's life has been snuffed out in mass extinction events, often associated with giant meteor strikes. The extinction event we are experiencing now was not caused by meteors, but by meat eaters. Stay with us. Coming up next on Animal Concerns of Texas, we have a conversation with Kip Anderson and Keegan Kuhn, the co-directors of a new film, Cowspiracy, which examines how a meat-based diet affects our planet. That's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Kip Anderson and Keegan Kuhn. Thanks for being with us on the show, guys.
Thank you so much.
Hey, guys. We usually like to start the show by asking our guests how they got involved in animal protection issues. Maybe Kip will start with you, and then Keegan, have you go second.
Sure, yeah. It kind of happened by accident with me. With being an environmentalist, doing everything that I thought I could to help the environment, and then I found a post that stated what the UN reported, that more greenhouse gases are emitted from livestock than the entire transportation issue. I couldn't believe it. So I started doing more research and then found out all the atrocities that are happening from animal agriculture. And that really, really thrusted everything forward big time. And then it got into, of course, get into the animal rights issue of animals as beings as well. But it kind of all came together all at once with that one post.
Right. Well, it's nice to know somebody read Livestock's Long Shadow.
Exactly.
Yeah. Keegan, what happened with you?
I was raised in a really conscientious household, brought up with the two tenets, always question authority and never hurt anybody, and that never hurt anybody extended beyond humans' bodies. It was all animals' bodies. So I was very much raised with that and compassion and peace and respect. So it's something that I've actually lived my entire upbringing and my whole life has been about being compassionate towards animals in every aspect of my life.
Wow, it's nice to make that connection, isn't it?
It is. It's a very powerful thing.
So did you guys see any films when you were younger, or how'd you get into the idea of making a film about this subject?
Oh, well, actually the film kind of follows my journey, kind of what explaining how it happened is, I saw a friend's post about the Long Shadow Report, and that's really where the movie takes off. It kind of follows my journey. It really happened. It happened a few years ago. But, I found out about this and then everything that else was happening with the environment due to animal agriculture. And then I looked on my favorite nonprofit organizations, the big green, as they say, Greenpeace, Sierra Club, Rainforest Action Network, and I was shocked to find that I couldn't find any of this information anywhere. I mean, you have to really, really, really dig to find, if anything, on any of these. So I started emailing and calling them relentlessly over months, even over years, and I did not get one single reply. If I wanted to give them money, sure, no problem. But once I started asking just basic questions about animal agriculture and why they're not addressing it, it was met with silence. So teamed up with Keegan, figured we have a camera and we go basically to their door, may have better results than how the phone goes.
Why the silence from the environmental groups? Why are they silent about this issue?
You know, I think there's a number of reasons why environmental organizations don't talk about animal agriculture, and those are all really explored in the film. You know, it could be as simple as the fact that it's an unpopular sentiment to talk about meat consumption and animal consumption. It is the fact that these organizations are, you know, donor-based, and their funding comes from donors, and they're afraid of upsetting their donors by talking about, you know, dietary habits. There's repression when you talk about these industries. You know, you can look at lawsuits such as the case against Howard Lyman and Oprah Winfrey from the Cattlemen Association, sued them for speaking ill against beef or hamburgers in particular. You can look at the, you know, the whole host of laws coming out now, these ag gag laws that criminalize exposing the atrocities committed by animal agriculture, whether it's against the environment or against the animals themselves. So there's a number of things that could be at play. And it could also be simply the fact that these people who run these organizations eat animals and they don't want to change themselves. So there, all these issues are explored and addressed in the film.
I was watching the trailer, which is quite captivating, by the way, and you know, you start by saying it's the one industry destroying the planet more than any other, and then you talk a little bit about the leading causes of various problems that we're facing now. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that, for one being species extinction. What did you all learn throughout creating the film about how a meat-based diet is affecting species extinction?
Well, found out that it's affecting just everything. I mean, it's like you name the topic of environmental, the big environmental topics that come up, greenhouse gases, wildlife, our water shortages. You know, we're here in California, you see these big signs everywhere. Save water, we're in extreme drought, and they just don't say, you know, really where the water's going. Over around half of the entire water is going to feed the livestock industry, whether it's through growing the crops to feed them or directly themselves. And it's like you name the topic, and essentially the number one culprit comes back to animal agriculture.
Yeah, I saw an infographic about California's drought recently, and it was comparing, you know, the stats and how the water consumed per day by, you know, one cow is 23 gallons and a person is 1 gallon, and a dairy operation can use up to 150 gallons of water per cow per day. You know, how much water is wasted when people eat a meat-based diet, when or they could say, or you could skip a shower for 6 months or give up a pound of beef, and it would basically be the same thing. It's just very disheartening that the people aren't really making this connection yet.
And then also, too, with, you know, 1 gallon of milk, it's not only meat, 1 gallon of milk takes upwards of 1,000 gallons of water to produce, which is just unbelievable.
Yeah. And from your website, 660 gallons to make one hamburger? It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
and you know, those are actually conservative figures. You know, most of the figures that we used in the film are on the more conservative side. You know, the numbers go anywhere from, you know, 1,600 gallons of water to produce a pound of beef to, you know, 5,000 gallons of water to produce a pound of beef in California. And the numbers can go even higher elsewhere in the world. So, you know, the 660 gallons, that's still a very conservative figure. It could actually be much higher than that. And, you know, and with the water issue, 47% of all the water consumed in California is for meat and dairy being one of the largest, because this is the largest dairy-producing state. These animals use a huge amount of water, and that's the issue that's not talked about from either the government or these NGOs.
You know, one of the things I don't know as much about is how this industry is creating these ocean dead zones. Keegan, maybe you can speak to us about, you know, what's going on with this industry and how these are happening.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the surprising things for I think Kip and I both when we started working on this film, is not realizing the impacts that animal agriculture has on aquatic life. According to the EPA, you know, the number one cause of water pollution, freshwater pollution, is from agriculture, and that's runoff from factory farms, feedlots, these lagoon pits, and from all of the fields of crops of genetically engineered soybean and corn and all of the alfalfa that is grown to feed to livestock. So you have this huge amount of nitrogen and phosphorus pouring into the rivers that are leading out to the oceans, and they cause these massive algae blooms, which deprive the entire ecosystem of oxygen and of life, where no fish and virtually any life can survive in those areas. And the leading cause of that is from animal agriculture. And again, this is something that's not really talked about. Another surprising thing about the impacts of land-based animal agriculture on the oceans is the amount of fish that are caught and fed to livestock. Actually, pigs in this country consume more fish than human beings.
Wow.
Yeah, so when we talk about saving fish, well, one of the first things you could do is stop eating pigs.
Oh, wow.
And so many people think that somehow farm-raised fish is more environmentally friendly, and they don't know that farm-raised fish eat a whole lot of wild-caught ocean fish.
Well, the thing is, people don't realize with fish is fish eat fish. No matter whether it's in the ocean or it's in the farm, approximately 5 pounds of fish goes into producing 1 pound of, you know, someone eating fish. So no matter how you do the numbers, whether it's in the farm or ocean, you know, that's kind of the bottom line. And we have a really solid ocean section, and that was a big learning experience for me of discovering all the things that are happening in the ocean with all the collapse of all the fisheries around the world. And you know, we explore if there really is such thing, a term as sustainable fishing, which essentially there really isn't. And we go really into that, deep into that, into the film. It's a very interesting part.
I mean, going back to the fact that it seems like no one wants to talk about these issues, you would think groups like, you know, Oceana or the Surf Rider Foundation especially would be really focused on these ocean dead zones and trying to do something about it. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how your interviews went without giving away the movie, but how did the interviews go?
Well, the interviews to get them were quite challenging. You know, they love talking about the sustainability topic, and that's, you know, really our foot in the door, which was true. You know, we're doing a film on sustainability. So each of these interviews was actually around 2 hours long, and, you know, for the first 40 minutes, just, you know, them telling all about sustainability, da-da-da, just loving to talk about everything. And then once I say, well, what about animal agriculture? What about the oceans and this and that? Boom, you know, it's awkward silence, funny reactions. And that's one of the things when people watch the film one time, they're blown away. They like it, love it so much. But then the second time is when they really, really appreciate the humor and all the little things that you just don't really pick up on the first time, that the second time you see, because it's pretty humorous, the answers they give and how they're evading things. And I mean, it's just unbelievable, you know. And that's the weird thing is, it's one thing if they're not addressing it, but they could, you know, they could say, you know what, you're right, we haven't been addressing it as much as we should, so, you know, we're going to start doing that. But no, they do these just weird answers and, you know, roundabout ways, and just will not come out. It's just really, really bizarre.
I know you have the world premiere coming up later this month in San Francisco, is it?
Yeah.
When will it be available on DVD for the rest of us?
We're hoping to have the DVDs available in the fall. It's all really dependent on how production goes and the possibility of distribution, the different distribution options that we're looking at. But we're hoping to have the film available some point this fall.
What are your other plans? I know you plan some tours. Can you possibly get this on cable television like Blackfish was on CNN? What are your plans?
We're setting out on a full national tour, about 2 weeks on the West Coast. We'll do a number of screens throughout the Midwest, and then about 2 weeks on the East Coast. Then it'll be an international tour. But we're also excited about offering people the ability to set up their own screenings throughout the country. Some point in late August, we'll be offering, through the platform TUG, people to organize screenings at no cost to themselves, no risk, at legitimate theaters all around the country, so they can bring the film right into their community and share it with as many people as possible.
You know, I imagine funding is an important issue for you all as filmmakers. Did you have any challenges with, you know, tackling such a, I guess, it's to some people, a controversial topic?
We did, yeah. We had some funding at the beginning of production, and we, you know, that's the thing about this film is because it is controversial, we had to do this entire film pretty much in silence. You know, a lot of films do a bunch of pre-marketing and things, and we really had to keep quiet until we were done. And, you know, midway through of filming, our funding backer basically backed out, and that's a part in the film. And basically, with a new nonprofit I started recently, had to fund the rest of the project, and then immediately we just completed an Indiegogo fundraising campaign to raise the funds for the next stage of marketing and getting the film to be seen, closed caption, and all that. And that's been a great inspiration. Something that turned out to be a big time struggle with funding turned out to be a real inspiring, humbling experience where we saw so much support from all around the world that this message, you know, this film is resonating with people, and they've been waiting for this to come out for so long. So, you know, we have around 1,400 people that funded us, and so now we're ready to go. You know, it's like we said, we started a movie that's really turning into a movement.
And I imagine our listeners could go somewhere to learn about helping support in the crowdfunding.
Well, the crowdfunding campaign actually ended last night at midnight. It ran for 44 days. People can still get involved, definitely, helping us promote the film, helping us promote the screenings. They can sign up for our newsletter at conspiracy.com. And we're going to be offering the pre-sale and pre-orders of DVDs soon.
So that's great.
Another way they can help. But really, you know, helping us spread this message, you know, get this information out there. That's what this film is really all about, is getting people informed. Because if people don't know the facts, they can't make informed decisions. So that's what it's all about, spreading this information as wide as possible.
And, you know, it was great recently. The Center for Biological Diversity just sort of came out and seemed to change their tune and really focus on animal agriculture and its effect on biodiversity and the environment. Hopefully your film will have the same sort of effect on many of these other organizations.
That's an exciting thing, yeah. The Take Extinction Off Your Plate from Center for Biological Diversity is an exciting campaign. They're an organization that's actually addressing animal agriculture, and they're addressing it in its full scope, too. They're, you know, for the organizations that do talk about animal agriculture, it often is about free-range or grass-fed or these quote-unquote sustainable methods. And Center for Biological Diversity is actually talking about the full gamut and what is the impact of grass-fed or free-range animal agriculture on biodiversity.
So now you all are wrapping up with Cowspiracy and looking to spread the message about it. What do you plan to do next, Kip, in terms of moving on after this film?
Well, this film's going to really take off on its own, and it really just begun sprouting into a huge, huge production all around the world that's been really creating serious change. And this actually is pretty exciting. It's part of the first part of a three-part trilogy. And we wanted to put everything in this one film, and we just realized, you know, with the environment, there's just so much in it that we had to separate three topics. So the next film is going to focus on health. Animal products affect the health and the leading, you know, organizations, why there's a lot of are being silent on that. And then we're doing a third part, too, that deals with the ethics of knowing these things and then what people do with them once you know the truth.
One thing that I was impressed with was just on a small clip I saw on the website was the coverage of wildlife. Like to get back for that a minute. Even among the animal rights and vegan community, there isn't much knowledge about what's happening to the bison and the wolves and the prairie dogs because of animal agriculture. And I'm glad you cover that in the film.
Yeah, you know, it's an important aspect of the film for us on many levels. We spoke with a handful of people who, you know, work with preserving wildlife. In particular, I think an issue that is of a lot of interest to a lot of different people is wild horses. You know, wild horses in this country are being rounded up en masse by the federal government.
By the very organization that was charged with protecting them, the BLM.
Absolutely. The BLM, you know, the Bureau for Land Management. There was laws created, the wild horse, I believe it was called the Wild Free Roaming
Horse and Burro Act.
Exactly, yeah, of 1973.
Yeah.
Which protects, you know, wild horses and burros. And there, right now, there are over 50,000 wild horses and burros in captivity in government holding pens. And the reason for that is, the rounding them up, is because they compete for feed that cattle eat. And there's, you know, these ranchers who are grazing cattle on public lands that are owned by all of us. And it's essentially welfare ranching. They get to graze these animals on our lands for a fraction of what they would have to, you know, pay if they were grazing these animals on private land. And it's just decimating the West, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can see it everywhere throughout the United States West, is the impacts of, you know, livestock grazing, particularly cattle and sheep, and the decimation. And when you look at the eradication of large predators such as wolves, that's all because of cattle ranching. When cows are attacked by wolves or other predators, those animals are killed, and oftentimes they kill entire packs. They don't go after individuals, or they'll eradicate entire species from, you know, states and full giant ecosystems.
I'm a National Park Service ranger, and a great embarrassment to me is the fact that the National Park Service is killing the bison of Yellowstone because they compete for grass on grazing allotments.
It's so sad, and for me personally, that was a big, when people asked, you know, what was the most disturbing part of learning about all these things, for me it actually was the wildlife, and in particular, say the bison. For some reason, they're one of my favorite animals. They're just so majestic and so beautiful. And to think that that's what's happening with the bison is just, you know, and anytime anyone says, like, that, you know, you see bison on a menu, I just cringe, like, how?
Yeah.
They're so incredible beings.
Well, I think, you know, what's so great about this film is that, you know, there's so many people in this country who don't have this emotional attachment to animals like pigs or cows or chickens. But if we're just able to let people know, you know, what they're eating, that cow or chicken or pig, and you know, what that effect is going to have on wolves and deer and all these other sorts of animals, hopefully people will make the correlation and have the passion to make the right choice for their diet.
It's what we call it, you know, there's with cigarette smoking, it's secondhand smoking. We have a term in the film, it's called secondhand eating.
Right.
You know, where smoking just affects whoever's right surrounds you. With eating, it affects everyone around your local community, but then globally too, you know, everything, greenhouse gases to the extinction of wildlife. And, you know, so you're not eating for yourself, you're eating for an entire community, entire world. That's how we really need to start thinking.
Diet isn't a personal choice anymore.
Exactly.
We've been talking with Kip Anderson and Keegan Kuhn, co-directors of the film Cowspiracy, and you can learn more by going to cowspiracy.com. We want to thank you guys for taking the time to be with us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
The Vegetarian Society of El Paso has a variety of great events planned for the summer, including a vegan drinks meetup, restaurant hoppers, dinner and a movie, and a potluck and cooking demo. To learn more about those and more about a vegan diet, please visit vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of Animal Concerns of Texas, you'll find them by going to ktep.org and clicking the listen button. That'll lead you to the archives of ACT Radio. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.
Far away. Well, you gotta let your soul